You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Brewski,
featuring former federal prosecutor and president of West Coast Trial Lawyers, Nima Rahmani.
Well, the drama started up not that long ago of possibly a new Alec Murdaugh murder trial taking place after we heard the allegations of jury tampering. And, well, the path for that has officially been laid. The blacktop is down. They are starting to go down the road. The case headed back to a lower court over jury tampering allegations. Give us some insight here, Nima. What happens from this point forward? What hurdles does the Murdaugh team need to get over to ultimately get what they want, a new trial for Alec?
So here's what happened here, Tony. After the conviction in the murder case, the defense appealed. And once that notice of appeal has been filed procedurally, that divests jurisdiction of the trial court. That means only the court of appeal can rule on the case. Well, the issue was, you know, after all these allegations regarding the court clerk, Ms. Hill came to light, what really needs to happen is there needs to be an evidentiary hearing. Mm-hmm. That means a judge is going to talk to the juror who was dismissed, the clerk, and get information. An appellate court cannot do that. An appellate court can only rely on the record that's before it. There's no witnesses that testify on appeal. There's no inquiry that happens at the parties. So, you know, this was really the right result. What happened was the South Carolina Appellate Court, they stayed the appeal. They essentially sent the case down to the trial court. And they said, listen, conduct your hearing on the motion for a new trial. Let's see what happens there first before we decide whether this appeal is even necessary. So now what the trial judge needs to do is talk to everyone that submitted those affidavits, because either someone is lying and perjuring themselves, or the clerk engaged in some felony jury tampering. I mean, they both can't be consistent. So what will happen is the judge should inquire of the jurors. We'll see if the clerk takes the fifth and invokes. That's going to be very interesting. But basically, we need a hearing to flesh through all these allegations.
If she does, in fact, take the fifth, I mean, how do they prove this? Obviously, jurors saying, yes, that these sort of actions took place from her. But do we need an admission from her? And does she face any sort of repercussions for these actions if, in fact, they turn out to be true?
Yeah, one of two things can happen. Obviously, she can testify and deny it. I mean, I don't think she'd admit it. That'd be surprising. Or she can plead the fifth. And this is actually something that happened in the Scott Peterson trial recently, where there was a juror, there was an allegation of misconduct, there was an evidentiary hearing she was going to invoke. And then the DA's office had to give that juror immunity. So it's a question of, you know, will prosecutors give Hill immunity? Because once you have immunity, the Fifth Amendment no longer, because there's no risk of prosecution, mm-hmm. She'll have to testify. So will they be forced to give her immunity, essentially tank their own murder prosecution? Because I think if the judge rules that this jury tampering did happen, if the clerk was really having these ex parte communications telling him not to believe Alex Murdaugh in his lies, I mean, that's pretty bad. And that's certainly a good basis to order a new trial. That's, you know, you can't bring those outside influences into the jury deliberation room, especially if it's a court employee.
Well, I mean, you're exactly right. And no matter how much we may think Alec Murdaugh is guilty of sin or be a horrible human being, at the very least for the financial crimes that he has admitted guilt on, if this sort of thing took place in court, he needs a new trial. If you believe in our justice system, you would have to go down that road as well. Let's just go down that for a second. Let's say that he does get a new trial at some point. Are we going to see a repeat of round one, or do you think we're going to see some new angles approached here from his defense, maybe even some things that we have never heard before in court, but some of the rumblings that others have talked about, and then we've talked about it on the air of, was there somebody else? Was this a hit? Was this a pressure into killing them? And if you talk and say, we did it, we're knocking off the rest of your family or something of that nature. Do you think that they could go down another route, considering his credibility is not the greatest, and to add another round of drama to this story, does that help or hurt him?
You know, I think had he not testified in the first case, he'd maybe have the opportunity to do something different the second time around. But I mean, he took the stand, he testified, he locked himself in. You know, it was interesting. When the first case was being prosecuted, I said, well, you know, what I thought maybe the best thing for the prosecution to do would be to try the fraud case first. That way you're sure that all that bad conduct would come in, because originally the judge was sort of hesitant. And then they said, well, you know, to the extent that the defense opened the door and started questioning the witnesses and said, well, what motive would Alex Murdoch have to kill his wife and son? And then, of course, the motive, at least from the prosecution's theory, was that to cover up all these financial crimes. Now that the financial crimes have been proven, he's been convicted, he's pled guilty, I do think it'll be a much faster trial. All that evidence, you don't need witnesses and accountants and former clients to come in. You know, that's all established either through stipulation or, you know, the guilty plea and so forth. I think it'll be a much faster trial, but I don't see Alex Murdoch having a whole lot of wiggle room to go in any type of different direction, because he's already locked himself into the testimony he gave in the first case.
Can the financial crimes be brought up into this new trial without much question, just considering he's already admitted guilt into this? Or is this something that they could suppress and say, look, as they did initially attempt to do, look, this has nothing to do with it. The judge agreed until, I believe, Griffin screwed up and said something in court. Yeah. That ended up opening the door to all of that. Is the door closed again? And does someone have to open it for those sort of allegations to come out into a new trial?
I think the door is open to the extent that it's the prosecution's theory of the case, it's the motive. But I don't think you're going to need all the witnesses to prove that these financial crimes occurred, because it was really sort of a mini trial within a trial. Or even more time was spent talking about how Alex Murdoch ripped off all these people and these different kind of scams that he was running. But to the extent that's all proven, he's admitted it, I think that'll come in a much cleaner, faster way. Yep. So we're not going to see a lot of witness testimony and financial documents the second time around.
Is that to his advantage? Is this part of the strategy? Because I think a lot of people wondered why he pled guilty, because it just doesn't seem to be his MO. But he, in fact, did. Is that to, if he were to get another trial, to make those allegations, to make those admissions, you know, less shocking, less, you know, character degrading? Because if you look at the first trial, I would guess a majority of the financial claims are what sunk him, more than just the murder allegations and the evidence there. If all of that is either tampered down because we already know it, he's already admitted guilt, it's not such a shock of, oh my gosh, he screwed this person over and that person over. It's already out there. Does that work into Alex's favor then? And if those points are either not even allowed in the trial, or even if they do get brought up, does he still get found guilty again of murder if a lot of that character information that seemed to pull him down is not present?
I think it is to Murdoch's benefit for this evidence not to come in, because look, a lot of these cases, especially when the defendant testifies, it comes down to likability and credibility, right? And Alex Murdoch was not likable. He stole millions and millions of dollars from clients, and not just any clients who were injured or lost a loved one. So no one likes a thief. No one likes a personal injury lawyer that steals. And, you know, Alex Murdoch came across as a greedy SOB. Now, when it comes to credibility, I think that's where maybe if you can kind of tweak his testimony, but a lot of it was like, look, I mean, he lied about his whereabouts, right? At the time of the murder, he said he wasn't in the kennels, you know, as far as some of the timeline. If you can maybe at least shore that up a bit, he has a chance. But if the jurors don't like him, and they did not like him because of all these financial crimes, he doesn't have a chance. So maybe, just maybe, he has a shot the second time around. But I'll kind of go back to what we're saying. You know, is it going to matter at all? I mean, he's no spring chicken. Yeah. And he's going to die in prison,
yeah,
probably federal prison, because of these financial crimes anyway.
He has the advantage of time right now, because obviously it's going to take some time to work through the court system if, in fact, we do get to a new trial. How do you paint Alex Murdaugh in a different light using the advantage of time before a potential new trial? How do you make him likable? If that you were tasked with that job, what roads would you go down?
Yeah, Tony, that's a tough one. I think what you got to do is just, you know, you got to say, listen, you know, you just got to come out. You got to own it, right? Which they didn't the first time around. Say, look, Alex Murdoch is a crook. He is a thief. He is a cheat. You know, you admit everything, but he's not a murderer. You know, he loved his wife and son. He had no reason to kill them. And, you know, what the prosecution is arguing, that this was all to cover up, you know, all these other crimes, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. In fact, he tried to have himself killed for, you know, the life insurance money for his wife and kids. why would he want to harm them to save himself? In fact, he was really going down this different path. I think that's what you got to do. And he said, listen, here's someone that has freely admitted to these other crimes, and he's doing all this time. So why would he admit to, it's not like he's trying to keep himself out of jail.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to do right by his victims. So this is just something that just frankly is not true. And that's why he hasn't admitted to it. So I think that's the argument you got to make. And I think it's a lot easier once you've pled guilty to these other crimes.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.